Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, what up? They eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, investors is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind to beauty of life. But when my mom said again, you could be Christ. I wasn't old enough to hold my d***ing P-right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him. Little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training and difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging. Splitting duchess up, strap up. The armies of school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build. With dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish gills, the cops, the time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holster. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. A black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case for the wish at the police. Look at the name Lake. Go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute the new Huey Newton.
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force. So what we fight for, my heart goes to you beautiful wife in war.
Enlist in more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect. And be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom. Wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward. If you can't support the girl, you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule is strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see today.
my arms.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Free to land. Revolutionary greeting. Welcome to another Jordan Emission Radio. I'm your host, Boomer Shakir, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of the new African community. Whereas our fifth goal, create our new African prison for release, reduce new African recidivism. And the overall goal is to transform the whole prison industrial slave complex to the big institutional learner through educational means by transforming the criminal mentality to a revolutionary mentality. Before I bring on the guest tonight, I'd like to go over a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On December 26, 1624, the first African-American child born in English America was christened William in the Church of England at Jamestown. In 1625, hold up. In 1625, the first detailed Jamestown census identified 23 blacks, 11 males, 10 females, 2 children, and a total population of 1,227, 487 white and Indian indentured servants, and 608 free white men and women. In 1626, 11 blacks, all males, identified the population of the Dutch colony of New Amsterdam, New York. They were listed as servants of the Dutch West India Company. 2 years after the landing of the 11 males, the Dutch imported, apparently at the insistence of the 11 males, 3 black women who were identified as Angolians. They were apparently the first non-Indian women in New York. In 1638, the first black arrived in Massachusetts from the West Indies on the Desire, which later became America's first slave ship. In 1956, Birmingham blacks began mass defiance of the Jim Crow house laws. On December, it's also we got to mention that hold on, I had to go back. My bad. I'm moving too fast. 1817 on 26th. President James Monroe inaugurated the first Seminole War, sending General Andrew Jackson and U.S. troops to Florida to destroy or pacify the Seminoles and their black allies. In 1848, William and Ellen Craft escaped from slavery in Georgia. Ellen Craft impersonated a slaveholder, and her husband William assumed the role of her servant in one of the most dramatic of the slave escapes. This is also 26 also the first day of Kwanzaa, Jumoja, meaning unity. Again, 1956, Birmingham blacks began mass defiance of the Jim Crow bus laws, where they weren't able to get on the bus. On December 27, the second day of Kwanzaa, Kuchakalia, meaning self-determination. In 1956, federal judge Dozier Devane granted temporary injunction restraining the city official for interfering with integration of Tallahassee, Florida city buses, said every segregation act of every state or city is a dead as a doornail. 1995, Robert E. Johnson Jr., associate publisher and executive editor of the Jet magazine, died in Chicago at the age of 73. On December 28, 1816. American Colonization Society organized a hall of the House of Representatives and called for colonization of free blacks in Africa. In 1918, George H. White, last of the post-Reconstruction congressman, died in Philadelphia at the age of 66. The third day of Kwanzaa, the 28th, in Ujamaa, meaning collective work and responsibility. In 1982, the shooting of African-American by Miami police triggered race riots. It occurred the 28th to 31st of December. 1986, more than 1,000 protesters marched through the Howard Beach community to protest the slayings of Michael Griffin.
On today's date,
on December 29th, the 4-day of Kwanzaa, Ujamaa, meaning cooperative economics, basic meaning family, which is the foundation. 1952, Fletcher Henderson, a ranger and battler, died in New York City at the age of 55. Also, today is the born day of Chairman Fred Adams Jr., who was born in 1969. And it's also the born day of Cotton Hill, Akron City, author, attorney, Mama Nikita Taifa. On December 30th, is the field day of Kwanzaa, Nia, meaning purpose. 1952, the Tuskegee Institute reported that that 1952 was the first year in 71 years of tabulation that there were no lynchings in America. In 1960, two U.S. courts issued temporary injunctions to prevent eviction of about 700 black sharecroppers in Hollywood in Fayette County, Tennessee. December 31st, 1775, along by impact of the Dunmore Proclamation, Washington reversed himself and authorized the enlistment of free blacks. 1862, at a meeting on the proposed Emancipation Proclamation, President Lincoln rejected advice from cabinet members who asked him to free slaves in Union eras where he had the power to free them. And also in 1862, President Lincoln signed a contract with adventurer Bernard Coates to colonize 5,000 African Americans on Isle Vache in Haiti at a cost of $50 a head. In 1918, the world witnessed the birth of Dr. Yusuf Banjalkovic, known as Dr. Ben, who was a historian, activist, and author. December 31st, the 6th day of Kwanzaa, Kumba, meaning creativity. In 1936, Dr. Benjamin E. May and YMC official Channing Tobias conferred with Mahatma Gandhi at an ashram in Wardha. 1953, Long Jack sworn as a Manhattan Bureau president. Okay, January 1st, 1804. Haiti became the first liberated nation of Africans in the Western Hemisphere, gaining independence. In 1808, federal law prohibiting importation of African slaves until the U.S. went into effect. 1831, William Lloyd Garrison published the first issue of the abolitionist journal, The Liberator. Black abolitionists, notably James Fortin of Philadelphia, were among the major financial and more of a supporter of the venture. 1857, Lincoln University, one of the first black colleges, founded at Ashman Institute in Oxford, Pennsylvania. 1863, President Lincoln signed Emancipation Proclamation that freed slaves to Confederate held areas where he could not free them and left them in slavery and Union held areas where he could have freedom. The proclamation freed slaves in rebel states with the exception of 13 parishes, including New Orleans, Louisiana, Fordham County in West Virginia, 7 counties including Norfolk, Eastern Virginia, and the state of Tennessee. The proclamation did not apply to border states of Maryland, Missouri, Kentucky, and Delaware. 1915, the world witnessed the birth of Dr. John Henry Clark, a historian, educator, overall pan-Africanist and thinker, also a country in probably Africa. 1923, Roosevelt, Florida. Over several days, this prosperous black town was burned to the ground and many blacks were murdered by whites after alleged assault on a white woman. January 1st, also the 7-day of Kwanzaa, Imani, meaning faith. In 1959, the Cuban Revolution became victorious. In 1990, fashion designer Patrick Kelly died in Paris at the age of 40. 1994, the Zapatista Uprising took place. In 2005, Shirley Chisholm, the first black woman in Congress and the first woman to mobilize
a serious campaign for presidency, died at the age of 80 in Ormond Beach, Florida.
Those are a couple of events that happened in history during this week, but the show must go on.
I like to freeline those identified for land, revolutionary greetings. I thank everybody who been currently educating themselves in their particular community, educating them not themselves. I thank everybody who constantly doing work in the community, graduate work, wherever it may be. I want to thank all the captured citizens, the political prisoners, the POWs who are currently educating themselves and constantly educating themselves, and also supporting the needs of others by creating design programs and other aspects that can better the condition of the people as well as the condition themselves while inside. And I thank everybody who been listening to our broadcast since 2014. We've been on for seven years now. And it's been a glorious ride, a great journey, very influential, very educational, and a very beautiful thing. And I would like to welcome to the show tonight, Brother Manola Rose. How you doing, good brother?
I'm all right, bro. I'm all right. Free the land. Just chilling out, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. You know, yeah, before we get into that, man, tell a little people about yourself, man, how you grew up, man. You know, how you grew up. Tell the people about your background, how you grew up, man. How you became the person that you are today.
Yeah, well, definitely. Originally born in Far Rockaway, Queens. Then eventually moved to Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. You know, and then from there just expounding on myself from there, you know what I mean? Just moving around, learning everything that I can learn, picking up on as many things as I could pick up on. Went through all the trenches, streets, things of that nature, gang banging, and then eventually, you know, landed into where I started to educate myself in such a manner where I understood my place and what was going on in the world. So that's pretty much how I got to be who I am as a person.
Okay. You know, that's a good thing, man. You know, growing up, was there any kind of influence that influenced you to change your mentality, to educate yourself or inspire yourself? Was there any influence around you to influence you?
No, you know, it's so crazy. The first thing I seen, which is, it's not even a good film, but I watched, when you think about it in this historical sense, but anyway, I watched Malcolm X when I was a kid, right? And I watched the movie, the actual movie. And me watching that, it kind of like transformed me into thinking like, yo, I want to do that. You know what I'm saying? Whatever it is that he was doing, that's what I wanted to do. So it kind of even led me down a path of, like, you know, becoming a Muslim and practicing Salafi Islam for maybe about 10 years or something like that until, you know, whatever. But, yeah, so that was the first thing that kind of triggered me and inspired me to do something different. And when I watched the movie, being a kid watching a movie, someone asked me, like, listen, you can, so I read the book, and then from there, that just, you know, just opened my mind to, because he made references to other books in his autobiography by, with Alex Haley, he made reference to, like, The Boys, Souls of Black Folk, and he also made reference to J. Rogers, Sex and Race, and so I went and I picked up, you know, all three volumes of Sex and Race, and then I started to put my hands on everything that Jay Rogers wrote, and likewise, I did the same thing with The Boys. And that's what kind of, like, sparked my interest to start to formulate my ideas and going into that process of changing.
That's very interesting, man. You know, Malcolm X opened my mind to as well when I read the autobiography. And like you, right. I wanted to read everything you read. I wanted to learn everything. And it developed
right.
An insatiable hunger for real. That when I already had the hunger, but it increased it from a conscious level.
you know, right. And it right. inspired me and motivated me. It was later on in my life I learned that, you know, that Malcolm X was the father of New Africa. That was after I became a country New African citizen in 2002. You know, I learned that he was the father of New Africa. So my foundation, that I had was very significant in regard to who I was, which is a beautiful thing.
Right. You know. And likewise myself. Like, what's so crazy is that I wasn't even aware of that in its initial sense, which led me to becoming a conscious citizen of New Africa. I wasn't even aware of that until I became one, which was a few years ago. Kind of like, because they also have the Schomburg Museum where I'm at in New York. And
yes, sir.
When I went to the Schomburg, it had so many, you know, just different letters and books and things that he was reading and touching on. And that's what kind of led me to, you know, doing that research. And then it kind of led me, you know, being from New York, we have such a rich history of, you know, just ingratiated in that struggle of resistance. And, you know, you can go down the street and see booksellers selling, you know, just different books all the way up, you know, up and down 125th Street. You can also see it when you're in Brooklyn. Down Fulton Street, they used to have, you know, people just sitting out there just selling these books, like the ISIS papers and things like that. And so, yeah, that's what kind of led me to just, you know, just filling my mind up with as many things as I possibly can just to get to the point of being like, you know, this is what it really is. This is what it boils down to, and having a better understanding of what it means to better understanding of liberation, period.
True indeed. True indeed. I'm going to add to that, you know, in regards to the founding provision of government in 1968, a lot of the founders came from New York, that especially a lot of the ones right. that held position, like Queen Mother Moore, King of Surgery out of Fume, Bobby Herman
right.
Ferguson. All the individuals out of New York, you know,
right.
you know, which is very, which is a very significant thing. A lot of them came from the East Coast, as well as out of New Jersey, Philly,
mm-hmm.
places out of the East Coast here.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of significant
right.
influence of
right.
things,
definitely.
Man, you know, which is a beautiful thing as well. True
definitely.
Indeed, man. In regard to your career. No, I'm saying you're a recorder,
mm-hmm.
artist, writer, producer, while you signed to Rock Nation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can you tell her? You know what I'm saying? What basically inspired you to write music, or were you doing it as young, or was late in your life?
Yeah.
How did it happen? What occurred? What triggered it?
Well, really, no, honestly, I never had really a real desire to even do music. How I got into it was that my nephew. He was doing music, and he received some beats or whatever from someone, and he just was like, yo, somebody gave me some beats, and you know, can you help me write some songs and things like that? And I was just like, all right, whatever. And so I just started working on records with him. And then a record that we had done, it was so many people on the record, and when they went to perform the record, it just didn't look right on stage because it was so many people, like, performing and, you know, performing the record people didn't know. So you're getting this weird stare. But it didn't take away from the record being good within itself. So a cousin of mine, he suggested, like, listen, maybe you should do it yourself and then, you know, let's see how it works out from there. So I did it, and the record that I created, someone wanted the record. They kind of like stole a record on their own, like Azealia Banks. It was the girl Azealia Banks, and she like. And then I heard the record on the radio, and while it was playing on the radio, because a guy that was writing for her or helping, you know, write with her, he was a friend of mine, and he just, you know, tried to like rearrange some of the hook and things like that. But it pretty much was the same record. And I heard it on the radio. And from there, I was like, wow, I made that in, you know, maybe 5 minutes. That means I can, you know, I can do this. Like, it's not even hard for me to do. It just came naturally. And from there, I just kept pursuing, you know, just writing and recording and doing things like that. And then I made a record called All About the Money with me and Troy Ave, and it just blew up from there.
Okay. 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 In regards to your music, when you look back at things in history, as in, who are some of the people that basically inspired you or you looked up to in the music industry? You know, who are some of the people you look up to right up to the now?
Right. Well, I'm from Brooklyn, so I'm from Marcy, so definitely Jay-Z was always an inspiration of mine. Max B was always an inspiration of mine. Chuck D was an inspiration of mine. You know, DMX, 50 Cent, Q-Tip, you know what I mean? You know, people like that were definitely major influences on my life, musically.
Okay. Okay. No, I also understand that you're a part of Nation of God on Earth, and you got to attribute
right.
The universe up a lot.
Right.
Can you tell us the knowledge behind your name? What is your name? What's the knowledge behind your name?
Well, the knowledge behind my name is, well, universal. If you break it down, it's you when you and I verse, then we can come together upon the truth, then we can be seen and heard everywhere. And yourself is making that knowledge born with through yourself, and acknowledgement went through oneself. So that's where universal self comes from. That is the simple breakdown of my name. Yes, but I'm a member definitely of the Nation of God's and Nerve, the 5% Nation, the Lost 5%, however you want to say it. And yes, I come from that tradition because my uncle, you know, when I started to learn these things from Malcolm, the first things that I did was, you know, went through the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And, you know, the first things that you get when you study in the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was the lessons, which in a wise referred to as the Northbound Muslim lessons, number one, Northbound Muslim lesson number two, 1-36, and as we call it in the 5% Nation. So you get these lessons, and I study these lessons, student enrollment, 1-36, 1-40, and 1-14, which is the Lost Found Muslim lesson number one is 1-14, Lost Found Muslim lesson number two, which is 1-40, and you get the student enrollment, which we refer to as the 1-10. So I started to study these lessons through my uncle. And when my uncle, as I was learning these lessons, I took a liking to him. And that's what led me to being like, I want to be an NOI. I want to be a part of the NOI. And then, but at the same time, you know, I'm a kid and I also understood that, you know, I'm not the person to be. I'm still in the street. I'm still moving how I'm moving. And I wasn't going to be the person to put on a bow tie and a suit and run around doing what I'm, you know, like it just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
That wasn't for me. And as I realized and recognized that it wasn't for me, I was like, well, let me sit there and let me, you know, I still went to the classes and I still went and learned, but it still had to me, you know, and this no disrespect to any of the NOI brothers, it still had flaws within the system because it was like they still believed that W.D. Farrar was, you know, he still was all law. You still had to pray to him while saying that you yourself is God as well. And that just didn't make any sense to me, right? And then they were saying things like Elijah Muhammad was still alive and he didn't die. So I was just like, yo, I don't know. That just sounds a little spooky to me. And I backed away from that. And once I backed away from that, then I, you know, learned that there is the 5% Nation who's taking these lessons and added on, you know, using these lessons and making the foundation the supreme mathematics and supreme alphabet as their foundation, and using that using supreme mathematics and supreme alphabet to draw up and make sense out of those lessons. And I just seen that from that angle, I was able to, you know, become myself, which is universal self, Allah.
True indeed, man. You know, that's a beautiful thing, man, to grow and develop in your own mind, to find yourself, what path you may choose. And, you know, the interesting that you mentioned out here, because it all goes back. A lot of stuff goes back to the connection to Malcolm X again, because Father Allah, who claimed right. 13th at that time, was a student, right. was a minister up on the Malcolm X at that time, you know.
That's right.
Yes, sir. Right. Malcolm X at that time, man. So, you know, it's the connection. It's a connection that
right.
goes on and on, you know.
Right, definitely, yeah, because that, you know, so definitely the father was a student underneath Malcolm at Temple Number 7 in Harlem. And like I said, so my whole ideology just revolved so much around Malcolm. I mean, even with that, that's why I always use the PGRNA as my political ideology and political understanding, and use the, you know, and from there, that political ideology molds and shapes, you know, my political thought. And I always use the Nation of Gods and Nerves in order to mold and shape my reality of how am I to recognize and see myself in a more, you know, grounded stance in regards to who am I and what is my position on this planet in its overall sense.
That's real understandable, man. It's real understandable to a person that have a conscious mind, you see, because you know you identify as a particular culture, you identify as national political identity, international identity as
right.
African. You still identify
exactly.
your culture as being a poor white teacher, and you doing
right.
you doing
exactly.
the signs and mouths of everything in your life so that you can have a better understanding of yourself. The only you can give
exactly.
the only you can give to yourself, you know.
Exactly. That's 100% how I see it and put it into this pot and, you know, formulate this gumbo and just, you know, because it all goes together. It all goes together for me. You know, it's like one of those things where you can, because even myself, you know, it's things that I learned from, you know, things that the father was doing politically that I myself, you know, don't agree with. You understand what I'm saying? So, but at the same time,
yeah.
he's telling me that you are Allah. You your own Lord. You your own master. So I have, even when I see things different politically, I have to back away and say, no, you know what I'm saying? Because I had to also learn the difference between principles and strategies, and I had to also, and I think that's one of the biggest problems in our communities is that we don't know the difference between the two, and he himself uses something as a strategy in order to obtain to get something that he wanted out of this system. I think a lot of brothers looked at that and then they go, you know what I mean, they took it too far, not realizing it wasn't a principle but it was actually a strategy. You know, it's like we see brothers, like you see people today, they say things like, oh, you should just vote because people died for you voting, but not recognizing that these brothers thought that voting, obtaining this ability to register to vote and participate in these political in this Democratic and Republican construct that they felt like, yo, if we show some allegiance to these parties, then maybe this party will do something for us. Now, you just, like, you asked the question, okay, if that didn't work, then when do we start abandoning that ship? Because it's not a principle, but it's just not, it's a strategy to obtain something. You know, just like nonviolence was a strategy. It's not a principle, but it was a strategy to try to appeal to white America, the hearts of white America. And once they didn't see, now people know that that didn't work. It's like, when do we start abandoning these things? So I think that was the things that we have to start to learn and understand the difference between the two.
Yeah, it's understood. Understood. We need clarity in everything. My next question is, I understand that you've been understand that you signed a Rock Nation, right? And my thing is that some of the people that you mentioned that inspired you, have you met any people since you've been signed to Rock Nation? Have you met any people? Have you communicated with them?
Yes.
Have you exchanged thoughts with them?
I've met with everyone except for I never met with X, and I never met Max B because he was locked up. But everybody else I met everyone. I met Hov, conversations with Hov and Q-Tip as well. Done some things for Jay, far as like when people want to label some writing stuff for these other people that he, you know, put me, you know, assigned me to do. So we had a few convos, you know what I'm saying? Me and Jay had a few convos. But even with him, it's like, you know, when we talk, like, I think that's another thing too, you know, just the separations of like, these people from their own, you know, like, because everybody has their own way of trying to obtain what they're trying to obtain, you know? Even, like, people like him, you know, you have to make that separation. Like the people that have influence on me musically, they didn't really have any influence on me ideologically, you know?
Understood. You know, yeah. That is a very important area of learning in regards to are you learning certain things from actually being involved with certain things? Are you being learning things from listening to what people are saying in their music that might speak about certain things that they've been around them and not actually might not actually be a part of certain things? It just might be around certain things in a particular area. So that situation is very detrimental in the person's growth and development, you know, and how they prosper, how they rise up, how they elevate. You know, they're very instrumental, you know, knowing no particular difference.
Right. I think that that's extremely important because I can agree with you on some points and then I can disagree. You understand what I'm saying? Like, I think people right. start. We start hero worshiping, you know, I would say, you know, we think because I, you know, like you musically, then I have to agree with everything that you're saying out of your mouth when you just talking normally. And nah, I don't have to do that. And then I also understand too, that, a lot of things that I've came across and a lot of things that I know and understand, I realize that these things have been strategically cut off from us, you know, so like meaning this information, you know, to the point where they would literally lock a brother up and place him in prison for the rest of his life just based upon his ideological and political stance, you know. So when I see brothers that don't really know certain things, I don't even fault them because in reality, they placed it and put it in a situation where you're not supposed to know.
Exactly. Yeah.
the austere teachers of American academia. Exactly
right.
What it is.
Like,
you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Like a prime example, like you can learn about George Washington Carver or whatever, but you're not gonna really learn about a Edward Wilmot Blyden or you know, you can learn about a Martin Luther King in his initial sense, but you're not gonna learn about a Kwasi Balogun. You're not gonna learn like that, you know. So these things are meant to be cut off from you, you know. So from that standpoint, I get it. I understand.
True indeed. I don't listen to some of your music. You know, so I've seen the different style that you had, different things you came from, you know, and I've seen that you might come from the street level, come from the educational level, you might come from the conscious level, you come from different levels, right? You know,
right.
You know, I understand that it's all missions in the music, right? So I want to ask you, in regard to your music, you know what I'm saying? What are actually some of your goals? What are some of your goals in regard to your music? Do you want to continue to write music, or you want to write for other people? What do you actually want to do in regard to your goals?
Right. I think it's just, for me, it's just both. You know, I love writing for people because it kind of allows me to express myself in different ways, you know, even if I'm like, you know what I mean? So being that I get to express myself in these different, you know, ways for talking as if I'm a whole other person, that's cool and fun too. But I also like to do music for myself because I just like the fun of the creative process of making music. And like you said, I also, you know, so I like to touch on all of these different things because I know and understand too, it's something, you know, you got to come at the people as one of them a lot of times, you know. And I learned that definitely just, you know, from studying the history of the father. And also, like, when you see the Panthers and things like that, you know, which is different, that street element, that, you know, it's just a different way of looking at it. And it's more approachable. When brothers in the street see you, they more take it, you know, a liking to that. You know, it don't sound preachy, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So in regard to how long has your career been? When did you first start?
Maybe about, this is going on maybe like 6 or 7 years now, maybe 6 years. So like 16, like maybe 16,
okay.
17. No, let me see. Yeah, maybe about 15, 16, something like that. 2015, 16.
So the whole time, you've been signed to Rock Nation the whole time, or have you went through distributions?
Right, no. So what I did was, in my originally, I was an independent artist, and then from there I had a deal with Empire, and I eventually did a deal also with French Montana and Coke Boys, and then eventually I went to Warehouse Rock Nation and that's how I got there. So I really just grinded my way till I got to that point. And I just, you know, basically wrote my way until I got to that point, pretty much.
Okay. And dig it. In regard to the new African citizenship, you know what I'm saying? What actually inspired you or prepared you to become a new African, cause new African citizen? What was the major going wrong?
Oh, wow. I got on that path, I would say, because one day I was listening to, what was I listening to? It was something from Dr. Mutu Shakur. And, you know, he kept saying it and referring to himself as a new African. And so while I was, you know, listening to Doc speak, I had ran across something by Kwasi and then Balagoon, and then I was like, yo, let me find Soldier Story by Kwasi. So then when I read Soldier Story, I was like, wow, you know, I just really, like, my brain kind of just was opened up in a manner where it was like, because I felt like us as a people, meaning all, you know, all new Africans, all blacks or whatever, we all know what it all boils down to that has to be done in order to liberate ourselves. We all know what that is, but we just don't want to do it, so we try to find all these other alternatives. So once I got into Washington, I learned about the Black Liberation Army and so on and so on, because I never heard of that. You always heard of, like, the Panthers, and then you always hear, like, and that's just that. Like, you don't really hear about, you know, these other groups after the Panthers, or, you know, that was going on during the, you know, when the Panthers fell or you know, dissipated, and these other groups that came about. So I started to learn about these other things, and then I started to all see that they were also conscious citizens of the Republic of New Africa, and that's what made me like, yo, I want to become a conscious citizen of the Republic of New Africa, and that's what kind of led me there. It was like something through Dr. Mutu Shakur, then I was reading a Soldier Story by Kwasi, and then it just led me to all these other revolutionary writings. And then I was like, yo, I want to be a part of that. Like, that's my final thing that I feel like is everything to me.
True, indeed. It's quite interesting because, you know, Bob Dr. Mutulu, one of the founders of the Brazilian Guard, he won the founders.
Right.
Or one of the original legionnaires.
Right.
He's been there in the beginning, you know what I'm saying? He's always held down. Like, he's a new African POW, new African political prisoner.
Exactly.
You know, and then...
Right, free
and then you look, then you, yes, sir. Then you think about it, you know, when you look at it realistically, you know, Tupac was attached to new African citizens as well, and he also was
right.
The chairman of the new African Panthers, you know, and... He carried on that tradition as well, you know what I'm saying? Well, as other people like Zaire,
right.
League, other
right.
individuals that influence. Again, you have people like Ludacris that being that's influenced by that may be influenced by his manager Shaka Zulu, who's also a kind of African citizen, right?
Right.
So it's just different
right.
aspects of things, you know, that can influence people, even educate them, right? Especially like you
right,
say,
definitely.
You know, you might like a person's music, but the ideology, it might not be fitting for you, you know, or you might get inspired
right.
somebody by your particular ideology, vice versa.
Exactly.
You know?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, because you're definitely right. You know, like, I remember listening to those Tupac records, and, you know, when he was, you know, shouting out Mutulu, shouting out, say, Cool Dinga, you know, shouting out Ronald Pratt. You know what I'm
all
saying? And
citizens.
People like that. Right. And so when I, you know, so it kind of like, I started to think about that as well. And I was like, wow, you know, like this is really what it boils down to. Because at the same time, think a lot of parts of me, I always understood, like, listening to Kwame Ture when he would just, you know, it boiled down to organization and coming into being a part of an organization that is politically driven to, you know, making these, you know, to this real ideology of what it really is going to take in order for us to become liberated. So it's like, so that's why I say, you know, I may like a dude music, like a guy like Jay-Z, who his understanding ideology is to somewhat financially freedom is going to make you liberated as a people, which I know that to not be true. You know what I'm saying? Some people, you know, think that they're going to cryptocurrency their way out of into liberation. You know, some people honestly believe that they're going to vote their way into liberation. You know, some people honestly believe they're going to Islam their way to liberation or and pray their way into liberation and things like that. When I came into becoming a conscious citizen of the Republic of Africa, I understood where, you know, started to read those trials or those stories of like the PGR and the 11 and Robert Williams and the We Will Shoot Back and things like that. And I was like, yo, and I watched, the interview with Kouassi when he was in prison and he gave this interview, you know, I think it was like his last interview while him being locked up. And he just was like, you know, he gave this feeling of like, this is what gangster really is. You know, this is what it looks like. You know what I'm saying? And this is what it's really going to take. And I had to really understand that because I used to think that, you know, I was going to stock market my way out, you know, and make this all this money, and then that's it. And it's like, nah. It's like even with the money, you know, you don't control no electricity. You don't control no water. You know what I'm saying? And these type of things, you don't control the food. So, you know, even with $1 billion, if they cut a man's electricity off and his water off and tell him he can't no longer walk out his front door, then his $1 billion becomes nothing. So I had to understand that.
Yes, sir. That's an interesting spiel, man. You know, especially in regard to independence, man. Independence is very, very important, you know. And that's something that every war has focused around independence, that focused around something on land, man, the control of it. Every war in existence. Even when you go to the walls of the street, if it be Crystal Bloods, you need Vice Lords or Lion King, or whatever it may be, you know what I'm saying? It's all about territory and turf. That resonates the land. You know, so the land about the independent controlling that land, you got to follow the independence. You know, they controlling that territory. So it offers the same thing by various scales and, you know, your very perspective the way you look at it, especially when you get deeper into things, you know.
Exactly.
You get deep into things.
Exactly.
Especially about that food, you know.
Right. You know, and that's the whole thing. It's like, me coming into that realization and really understanding that and to really see that this is what it's going to really take and this is what it's really all about, then I had to, you know, I had to come to that conclusion, you know, and I also had to realize, too, that you can have unity without uniformity as well, you know, so I had to recognize and see that, you know, some brothers going to have different understandings and different ideologies. It doesn't make them not my brother anymore, you know, because I was once on that type of time, too, before. I used to be like, you know, that dude say one thing that I don't agree with, I'm just like, man, this dude is, you know, he no good. But I just, you know, stopped doing that as well. Unless it's just crazy. Unless it's something really crazy.
I understand that. My next question is, right, when you hear the name George Jackson, what did that mean to you? What kind of feeling, what did that mean to you when you hear the name George Jackson? What kind of feeling do you have about George Jackson?
Man,
who is George Jackson to you, you know?
George is the personification of what we all should be, what we all should strive to be in the end. I feel like George can do no wrong to me. It's like he's a perfect human being. I don't mean he never did nothing wrong, but it's perfection in him himself. His mindset is perfect. How he died was also perfect to me, and I understood it and I understood how his name struck fear into the world, you know. Like, I remember reading one time, I was reading about the reasons why Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was the governor of California at the time, asked to white kill Tukey Williams. And he said, out of his own mouth, his reasoning for killing Tuk was because he saw George as a as a hero. And being that he saw George Jackson as a hero, he said that he would believe that he would once commit violence again. But what it really meant when he was this time, he was going to commit violence against the state and his you know, and his empire. He was going to commit violence against the empire, which was crazy to me because it made me really understand the power George had and the fear that this government and that the empire had of George and his mindset and his thinking and his ideology. And that, and so to me, George is like, is everything. You know, when I first read Blood in My Eyes and, you know, hearing him talking about the gorilla and what that is and you know, how you have to be and structure yourself to be like a machine, you know, and to really be with it when it comes down to it. And I was just like, yo, man, I never heard no one really make it so simple and so plain, you know, as George. And I was that's what like George represents for me. He's the perfect human being to be.
Indeed, that. Indeed, that. You know. Yeah. It's quite interesting in regards to a lot of brothers that came from like the street organization, especially in the California prison system, were greatly
right.
influenced by the ideology and the writings and Conrad and George. Especially the brothers
right,
who
definitely.
Were considered to be Key Way, Don Bull, who came through the particular structure there
right.
in California, like the CCO,
right.
the BNCCO, UBA,
right.
UBA, you know, the
right.
whole different structure, Vanguard,
mm-hmm.
you know, so forth, so on, right? You know, this, even though George was assassinated, you know, the spirit lived on within the activity and countenance of other brothers in there. It wasn't through his particular riots. So they continued that thing
exactly.
on and inspire other individuals, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, it's so great. It's just so ill because, when I first, you know, learned about the death, about his death, and I was reading Jaleel Muthi King's book on the BLA, and he was showing the, you know, things in that book that added. You know, that was talking about what occurred after his death, you know? And I was like, wow, like, just to show these brothers and the connection they had, you know, and one of those things being like the Attica uprising all the way in New York, from California all the way to New York, you know what I'm saying? And I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
Just, to, you know, because these are the things that they don't show us. They don't show us that these brothers from, you know, a brother from all the way in California, and him having this pipeline even through the prison system where you're supposed to be at your most suppressed and oppressed position and situation, we was even through that we still had this pipeline where the brothers from California was connected with the brothers all the way across east to New York, you know what I'm saying, and went up and did what they did just in retaliation and also in protest unto the brother. And like I said, and even to this day, when brothers get in the prison system, man, those are some of the first things you encounter. You know, some of the first books you encounter. You know what I'm saying? You know, and you kind of get that, you know. And then from George, you start to get into so many other things. Like, man, when I first read Blood in My Eyes, it led me to Fanon and Wretched of the Earth and Black Skin, White Mask. And things like that. Not when I've read Fanon, I was just like, I was blown away. You know what I'm saying? Because I was just like, wow. You know what I'm saying? Like, just Fanon's story to me was just crazy. And I was just like, wow. You know, I want to keeping on with that tradition and, with that sound ideology, man. George is phenomenal, man. The things that he was able to accomplish from behind the wall. And it also shows, it's also an inspiring story because it shows you how a brother, you know, went to prison, you know, for something and, you know, for a little bullshit robbery or whatever, and gets there who this person was supposed to have a meaningless life. He's supposed to mean nothing. He's supposed to be, you know, just a fucking a mustard seed in a corn, you know what I mean, in a mustard seed thing, it was nothing, and how he obtained to basically live on, you know what I'm saying, through his death since the 70s, and now we're still speaking on him in this day and time, and the things that he wrote then in Blood of My Eyes and Soul of That Brothers and things like that, it's very much true to this day.
True indeed. True indeed. You know, what I wanted to ask is that you know, you mentioned Attica. You know,
right.
The whole Attica manifesto came from the Folsom Manifesto.
And, that's right.
And one of the writers of the Folsom Manifesto was the Elder Kamasi Agidia. He's on a documentary, Blood and Crip Made in America, you know, the General Kamasi. And Elder Kamasi.
Right. Definitely.
Elder Kamasi was a direct student and a comrade George. It did time to get in 1768, you know, and they
right.
shared spade against time and everything, you know, and I'm just saying that because they showed the connection, what you're talking about. And
exactly.
also that
exactly.
Bobby Jaleel Moody King also did time in California as well. But he ran some of the same Conrad also. They were around Conrad George also. He ran some of the same Conrad mm-hmm. as you, Conrad George. You know, so
right, exactly.
that's that connection again, you know, in regard to certain things, how things go and what's going on in particular. You know, a lot of brothers from the Panther Party, BLA got locked up. A lot of comrades,
right.
you know what I'm saying, that was associated with Conrad George. They're with Conrad George. They actually looked out for the brothers, you know what I'm saying, in regard to things, you know.
That's
it,
right.
It could be food,
right.
it could be weapon, it could be physical training, or it could be books, whatever. You know, that tradition
right.
carry on.
Right.
They carry on the tradition, man. You know, it's a strength in brotherhood.
Definitely.
You know, it's beautiful, man. It's beautiful just to see these particular developments, man. You know, he particularly influenced it. You know, see, Conrad George, just like Malcolm X, that they both triumphed in their criminal times, their revolution mentality. They both did that through education
exactly.
by reading and studying. That they both went
right,
through their transformation.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, they went through their transformation.
Right. Definitely. Definitely.
Bunch of cars, the Eldridge Cleaver.
That's right.
Sunshine Secure, a.k.a. Monster Cody, you know, it goes on and on,
mm-hmm.
you know. For different individuals
right, right.
that went through that particular stage, man, to basically find themselves, you know, and searching themselves. You find themselves.
Right, definitely.
And contributed.
Definitely. Right, definitely. And then I also, too, want to say James Yaki, Sal, too, you know, when I got into Phenom, one of the first things I got my hands on was his meditations on Phenom and him explaining Phenom, and that's what, yeah. So that was another thing that really affected me.
Yeah. James, like you said, Yaki Yakuba, AKA Steve Bashana, he actually was like one of the only fellas. And later on to hold up ministry position while incarcerated, Ministry of Information. He had a position for a year while incarcerated. You know, and
right.
Ministry of Information for the business of Family Alpha. You know, and
right.
the head deputy minister at that time, one of the deputy Obama Messiah Hosea was a former political New African political prisoner who did 14 years as part of the Armistead Collective, where it was by the side of Bakari. You know, it was out of New York who won the founder of Jericho Amnesty. You know, so the connections
right.
are like, the connections are really just stupid in regard to certain things, like a full circle. You know, when you come
exactly.
to understand certain things.
Exactly.
Understand things, man. My next question is, I see you be promoting things like New African political prisoners, political prisoners,
mm-hmm.
prisoner wars. What's your motivation behind
right.
that?
The first thing I've ever done, you know, when I was 17 years old, and when I first accepted Sunni Islam, we had a imam named Siraj Wahaj down at Taqwa Masjid in Brooklyn on Portland Street. And they was putting something together for the Imam Jalil Alameen, formerly known as H.Rag Brown, right? And so we did, like, this whole thing. They had a rally for him and, you know, raised some money, some funds for him, and I was a part of that. So from there, it led me to the sister, Sophia Bukhari, you know, because she was heavily, you know, heavily involved in that, in that struggle and that push for the brother, you know. So I was just like, wow. So then that led me to people like Mumia, and I was like, all right. So then, you know, I started to learn about, you know, these political prisoners, you know, the ones I mentioned, also brothers like Leonard Peltier and stuff like that. And then because I had some friends down at a reservation, that's how I learned about him, down at the Shinnecock people, even though he's not Shinnecock, but they had some, you know, something for him. And I was like, okay. And I started to really get involved with, you know, with that process of, you know, helping the free brothers in any way that I could, whether that be signing some petitions, whether that be, you know, maybe writing a brother or something, or maybe that, you know, maybe however that may look, whatever that can be done in order for, you know, some of these brothers to come home and be free. So that's what led me really getting into that, was first Jalil Alameen, you know, and we still struggling and fighting to get, you know, to get him free. And so, yeah, that's what led me to that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing, man. You know, it's like Sophia Bukhari, the book, the Lest We Forget, you know, she was speaking about a lot of the comrades, as
right.
well as the war in the war before. You know, she talked about a lot of the comrades.
That's right.
Man, you know. No,
that's right.
And she also wrote the basic writings and words of the Black Panther Party in regards to the army. She wrote all that. You know, she wrote all this.
Right.
Stuff, you know, put it out there as,
right.
as a document. You know, so the sister, she was a political prisoner herself as well. You know, did like 8.5
yes.
years. You know, so
right.
things are very significant in regards to everything. And she also was cutting you out of the citizen. She was a minister of defense at one time. You know what I'm saying? Other positions,
yes.
vice president, other aspects, you know, so she did the work too as well. You know, she did the work.
Right.
She left an inspiration,
exactly.
man.
Right, definitely.
Yes.
Definitely.
She did the work, man. You know, that's a beautiful thing, man. In regard to Black August, what did Black August mean to you?
I think it's like, you know, you see things in the Jewish community, and they say, like, never forget and never again.
Yeah.
In regards to what happened with, you know, Hitler and the Harlem and all these type of things, I think Black August is that for me. You know, it's the never forget moment, it realigns me. It brings me back to the reality, you know, because it, you know, just from the industry that I'm in, you could become very jaded. You know, you get in certain amount of money. You know, you're in all these parties, you having all this fun, women, all these types of things are going on. You know, like how a Muslim would use Ramadan to realign himself back into what his roots. I use Black August in that same manner, you know, it realigns me, it pulls me back into what's for real, what's going on, and what's the reality of the day, and that's how I use Black August, and that's really what it means to me. It's my Ramadan, put it like that.
Okay, you know, for historical reasons, you know, the first Black August took place during Ramadan in 79, right? It took place during Ramadan.
Right.
You know, and it was like being referred to at the revolution, Ramadan for a particular radical and a revolutionary at a particular time, right? You know, and
there you go.
That's why certain things came to exist in regards to, like, the sun up, sundown fast, and, you know, things of that nature.
Right.
Became digital mm-hmm. that were taking place at that particular time,
mm-hmm.
you know, in regard to certain
right.
things, right?
Right, right,
you know,
definitely.
Just, that's another beautiful thing, you know.
Right, and that's how I really look at it. Like, it's that for me. Like, I'm not a Ramadan observer, so that's my Ramadan. And it also, you know, how they tell you as a Muslim during Ramadan, you read and read the Quran and all these things. Well, for me, I just go back and I would go back through some, you know, through Soledad, brother, through Wretched of the Earth, through Soldier Story, through We Are Our Own Liberators, and things of that nature, or some of the writings from Sundiata Kohli, and things of that nature. And I would read those books just like that, like it was the Quran. Because to me, it is the Quran. You know, those books are the Quran. Those are my Bibles for me, you know.
So I understood.
You know how they say, like,
understood.
Yeah, you know, like, you know how you say, like, and when they look at the Bible or the Quran, they say that God spoke through these men. You know what I'm saying? And they use it in that way. I look at it the same exact way. Like, you can't tell me when George was making these references and when George was writing Blood in My Eyes, that God wasn't speaking to him. How not? You know, it's the same thing. Shit been true since I don't care who you put in any portion of time and place, it's gonna stand up. It's gonna be true. As long as you're going to have oppressed people, you're going to have the oppressed that's going to identify with that. I don't care where you put them at.
No doubt.
Any country, any state, any time. It's going to be real. You know, it's going to be, you're going to find yourself in it. So I look at it just in that manner.
No doubt. My next question, you mentioned that you was in the streets, right?
Right.
Now, when you look back at things, you look at yourself now, right? What type of information or what type of influence have you brought when you went back into the streets and brought to the people that you were once in the street with? What have you contributed to them right now?
Oh, definitely, man. Like, you know, a lot of brothers that was, you know, with me banging, all of them are no longer, you know. Because we never identify and say that we aren't a part of the gang, but we just don't gang bang anymore. You know, these are still gang members, but we just not gang banging on anyone. So, but these brothers all changed their lives, and we all still talking to brothers to try to get them to understand on who it is that we should be really banging on and why, you know, in its greater purpose. So, I've done that definitely. Or any brothers that, you know, of mine that went to prison, I send them books, things to read, just to, you know, so they can educate themselves. Brothers that was out on the street with me, that's still out on the street with me, I basically became like their father. I raised them. Even though we're the same age, I moved and did certain, so many other things and educated myself that I brought those same things back and educated them as well. So we still, you know, they're still part of these struggles and still a part of this movement as well, while even still standing up for themselves as a man and knowing and understand who it is, who's the real enemy out here and what it is that we really need to be doing and who we really need to be fighting and what this war in is really over. So, yeah, definitely.
Okay. How you mentor any younger brothers or any young brother came up to you and said that you were a positive influence thing for your life or anything? Have you ever experienced that?
Yeah, definitely, man. Like, definitely, you know, because you have, you know, I had a lot of young brothers that, you know, because I always, being that I touch on so many different aspects musically of myself, however you approach me, I know why. I can tell why you like me, you know what I'm saying? I can tell why, you know, based upon how you approach me. So when people approach me from that standpoint and like, yo, I didn't know a lot of these things, or you put me onto this and that, you know, as far as like, you know, like some of these great men and women that I've mentioned, you know, that's very gratifying, you know what I'm saying, for me, because I know that my arm is reaching to these people, in it, you know, and they're really, like, you know what I'm saying, getting to put themselves in that situation and going, wow, you know, I didn't know that, you know, because we all, being that, like I said earlier, they use these things to cut us off from a lot of this information that was cut off from us. You know, we think we got to be like this holy roller guy in order to, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they ain't never seen revolutionary gangsterism. They never seen that, you know? So when they start to learn about that, it doesn't alienate them from themselves. It really go, oh, that's, I can identify in that. I know what he's saying. I know why he's saying it. I agree with that. That's what I want to be.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, Baba Dr. Matulu worked close with Tupac in regards to articulation of the street ideology with the country ideology in regards to reach the people, right? You know, he worked close with him on a particular aspect. As well as other individuals like Baba Choke Lumumba, Baba Tani Tai Yemba, Baba Akin Yemoja, who all were founding members of NAPA, as well as MHM. You know, they had a lot of dealings with Tupac as well in regards to certain things because, Dr. Matulu also was the one made the call for them to found NAPA. You know, he's the one made the call and everything. So, you know, and then Bob Watani was with Tupac manager for some years, and Choker was his attorney. You know, so the connection was very they were very solid at certain times, right? In regard to certain particular words and certain agendas and goals.
Definitely.
And also
even the Thug Manifesto.
That's what I'm saying. No, that were actually some Matulu work in regards to certain things, you know.
That's right.
That was the elder work in regards to a lot of things, you know. His contribution, some of his contribution, man, you know. A lot of times, like you said, Conrad George reached a lot of people. Dr. Matulu reached a lot of people, you know, even though these brothers are incarcerated, they're still doing the work in particular. Still writing designs and doing the work like going to find a GDU. I do with Luka Bob Shakur. He's still writing, creating programs, doing the work, you know, that influencing people to this day. You know, people still doing the work, you know, even though people are incarcerated, been in the shoe program and other aspects, people still doing the work. You know, like Carlos George say, never count my money broken men. You know, that basically means that I'm going to have that spirit resistant, you know what I'm saying, until I leave. You know, and that was Black Hawk about the spirit of resistance. You know, that was
That's
about
right.
being resistant. Fighting for, you know, that fight was doing what's right, you know. That was about in that particular aspect of things, man. You know, that was about, man. You know, my next question is when people talk about Prince Hall, right, being like father of Black Masonry, the social reformer. He deferred mission on Pan, going back to Africa. What actually your thoughts about that in regard to, as an individual, what are your thoughts about that?
It's a book called The Black Square. That anybody that is up under Prince Hall Freemasonry or Freemasonry period, you're a Black brother, they should read that. It's called The Black Square. Even him becoming a Freemason, getting back to Africa and connecting it back to, you know, his own homeland. So it was, in a sense, him, you know, still trying to make this connection and identifying with his African roots. And I think that people should really look into that a little more. And because at the time, people literally use masonry to navigate. Harriet Tubman used a lot of the Princeton Freemason lodges as safe houses for slaves, from runaway slaves. You know what I mean? From so-called slaves. So that's why I feel like, you know, that has to be really reexamined. I think people should really look into that from that standpoint, because he was an original. I don't say original because he wasn't the first, but he was someone trying to make that connection, and also he definitely was planting that seed by naming his lodge the First African Lodge or whatever. So yeah.
Yes, sir. You know, that's a beautiful thing, because it goes back to identity, you know.
Right.
It shows you a long line of us referring to ourselves as being African, you know, period.
That's right.
A long line of certain things. Other terms came later. It's just like it's been very wars being fought, you know, and all the wars being fought. By being in the wilderness, North America, or the empire, whatever you refer to as, like Babylon, whatever you want to call it, you know, it's been a lot of wars being fought. And people have fought with different ideologies. You know what I'm saying? It could be more assigned, it could be Nation Islam,
right.
it could be African National, it could be Pan-Africanism, it could be the Black Liberation Movement, it could be the Black Power Movement, Black Arts Movement, the African Independence Movement, the right movement, so forth and so on, right? People have fought on various levels, you know, fought on various levels. And those various levels are connected to various parts of our history and various predicaments, and also various places and people that resonate historically in regards to our overall struggle as people, you know. And it makes a lot of sense when you start studying these things and you meet people. You like you say, you mentioned Arthur Schomburg. Now, Arthur Schomburg himself was he considered himself to be an African Latino. He also was a Prince Hall Mason. You know, he was a Prince Hall Mason himself.
Right.
And he wanted the main reason why Dr. John Henry Clark came to New York, because he wanted to meet his brother.
Right.
He had read it already. He wanted to one reason he wanted to meet his brother. You know.
Right,
and when John Clark came to New York, you know what I'm saying? He had met Dr. Ben. They became close. He met Queen Mother Moore, and Queen Mother Moore the one introduced him to Malcolm X. You know, so it's just an overall connection in regards to if an individual is learning anything, educating themselves, you have to travel to certain places. You know, physically, well, it means you got to go to you got to travel to certain places to get that understanding for yourself. In particular, you're not going to get it by remaining stationary, by remaining in one spot. It's not going to work for you. You know, it's not going to work for you in regards to connections, network, relations. It's not going to work for you. You got to move around. You got to go somewhere other than where you're at.
Right, definitely.
Physically, you
definitely.
Know, to get that understanding.
Definitely. Right, definitely. Definitely.
That's a beautiful thing, man. That's a beautiful thing, man. To basically become conscious or awake or aware or elevate, you know, you can use many terms for it, depending on what area you came from, depending on what your affiliation, your association, you know, it's always good to become a light, to awake,
right.
To awaken yourself.
You
know what I'm saying? 85% can be awakened at any given time, you know? They work at 8 to 5 times. Ones who are deaf and black are working at any given time. More than 3rd eye matches are from their eye. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, again, I would like to thank you for coming to our platform and show you how to understand it, right? You know, I want to, I wish you success in all your endeavors, right? You know, and
thank you.
I wish you success in all your endeavors, brother. You know what I'm saying? I know you got I look forward, you know what I'm saying, to see how you develop later on in your life, right? You know, and also, at this time, I want you to give your final thoughts at this time. What are your final thoughts? What you want to leave it with? you're going to leave with any kind of contact in regards to Instagram or Twitter or you want to leave to any handles for a website, whatever, how people can get in touch with you, how people can follow you, how people can find, find your music, you know, just all that stuff.
Right.
Like all the stuff you want to leave us with, you know.
Well, yeah, you can find me on Instagram on Manolo_Rose. That's MANOLO_ROSE. Same thing on Twitter, Manolo Rose, no underscore, on Facebook. You can also find me there. You can find me on all the DSPs, meaning for music. You can find me on all the major platforms, streaming platforms, musically. And my real final thought is just, you know, free the land. And that's it.
Okay. Okay, by you mean this, sir. If anyone had any associate, comrade, friend, relative in the lines, please link to our website with www.georgeuniversity.com. Again, it's www.georgeuniversity.com. Long live resistance, long live African independent movement, the struggle for land and freedom. Free the land.